Also hot because it's an opportunity for us to actually do some inner work on whatever level feels appropriate and comfortable for us in the general truth of our lives at this point. So I also want to tell you that the music we just heard is a Sanskrit chant from the Upanishads, and it actually asks that we be taken from darkness to light, asato ma satgamaya, that we be taken that we be taken from untruth to truth, from the unreal to the real, from the darkness and dullness of our embedded states, our stuck states, to the light and truth and pure awareness of our awake states. And finally, that we be transformed from the experience of life as a series of deaths, that is, which I interpret as the constant experience of disconnection from ourselves. Death is really disconnection from the core of ourselves, to immortality, which is our ability to be centered in our core. And it's in that capacity to be centered in our core that real emotional practice gets done. So part of what we'll be doing here, and what I hope you'll be doing in all of your life, this is a class full of powerful practitioners. There are many people here who've meditated for a long time and whose energy and whose practice helps to make this class powerful for all of us. And there are people here who haven't done much practice, at least not that you know of, I don't think that any of us in this time are without spiritual practice, even though we may think we are, because the merely walking through daily life on this planet at this time requires quite a lot of self-examination, self-recognition, and other ways of centering ourselves, other forms of spiritual practice. So we all bring this to our time together. We also bring our wounds, our confusion, our struggles, and the different ways in which we've managed to use these struggles to further us on the path to awareness, to awakeness, to the recognition that actually everything is as it is perfect as it is, and yet everything can be transformed. So, and our emotional life is one of the best examples of a field in which we can begin to understand what this means and to practice it. So I want to give you a couple of principles that we're going to be working with. They're essentially tantric principles, but there are Buddhist principles. There are also principles from the non-dual tradition. They're gestalt principles because so many of so much of our experience in contemporary Western, in that place where the Western psychological understanding is cross-fertilized by the Eastern traditions. And, you know, we live in that cusp. So here are the fundamental principles that we'll be working with, and we'll go into them more later. One of them is that all emotions are useful. And in a certain way, this is a no-brainer. I think most of us understand this at some level, that all emotions are there for a purpose, that they give us messages, that they connect us to ourselves at different levels. But the fact is that even though we may understand it, the truth is that we have some very, very strong prejudices towards so-called positive emotions and against so-called negative emotions. In other words, we really do judge our emotional life, good, bad, I'm angry, that's bad, I'm in shame, that's bad, oh, I'm happy, that's good, oh my God, I'm feeling spiritual love, that's even better. So we're constantly making distinctions right off the bat with our emotional propensities. So happiness and joy, fantastic, let's have more of them. Anger, jealousy, fear, bad. Shame, really bad. Brené Brown, who's and currently enormously popular and very gifted and, you know, hilarious and profound speaker on shame, sometimes tells a story about how she was speaking at a women's club, a lunch club, and the chairman asked her what she was speaking about. She said, "I'm going to speak about shame." And the chairman said, "No, no, no, we don't speak about shame here. Let's talk about how to find happiness." So that's, of course, hilarious. And Brené Brown, eventually, of course, became internationally famous for her work on shame. But what that woman said to her is not so unusual. So when you have these feelings, especially if you express them, and that's a big thing, you're going to feel like you're too emotional. You're probably going to be known in your family and your circle as too emotional. And if you repress them, you know, if you can't feel your emotions, if you're out of touch with your emotions, then probably you're going to feel out of touch with your creativity. You're very likely to have stress-related diseases that come from, you know, holding in both the so-called negative emotions and also the positive emotions, because it turns out if you repress positive negative emotions, it actually is going to eventually skew your capacity to experience positive emotions. So the first principle is all emotions are useful, including the ones we think are bad. The second principle, and those of you who studied with me before, and especially those who've studied with me a lot, know that this is very core to the teachings and the lineage that I come from, which is that all emotions are very immediate forms of Shakti, of divine energy, of the core creative energy of the universe. And what that means in practice is that the more we can actually get in touch with the felt sense of emotion, the more access we begin to have to our innate power. And one of the qualities of Shakti, and you know, this quality is understood in many, many fields, from chaos theory to Buddhism to a lot of the sort of cutting edge emotional work in the world today. The thing about this creative capacity in Shakti, this ever changing dynamic, sort of movement in motion quality of Shakti, is that Shakti is self-organizing. And if you're familiar at all with chaos theory, you know that one of its really great and helpful and useful principles is the understanding that living organisms are self-organizing. That is, if they get out of balance, they tend, under normal conditions, to naturally return to balance. And one of the things that's said about systems, about, say, healthy systems in chaos theory, is that neither rigidity, where the system is stuck, or chaos, where the system is just going haywire, are healthy states. The tendency of self-organizing structures, meaning our human mind, as well as slime mold and other biological processes that kind of have illustrated this principle, and hurricanes and other natural phenomena, the tendency of structures to naturally self-organize is at the heart of what it is to work with emotions and the path of emotional transformation. It is not, and I really want to stress this, it's not about trying to whip your emotions into shape or to get rid of the bad ones or to replace them with good ones or to just always feel good. It's really not about that. It's about learning how to feel your way into the expression of emotions on the very immediate, intense level. And also, and this is what to me is really the subtle part, is to actually get to experience what the subtle level of emotion is and what it is really there to show you. Because emotions are, they are messengers. Emotions have language. Emotions are our guidance system, as one New Age tradition tells us. Emotions are the best natural guidance system we have. So in order to actually experience the transformative power in emotions, we need to learn how to decipher its language. And we do this through looking at the feelings, through looking at their expressions in the body, also through looking at the narratives, the stories that we tell about them, and also tuning into that subtle sense that, you know, sometimes is called the spiritual eye, the visionary sense, that can actually see through to the heart of something by finding a symbol or inspiration, intuition. So that's how we're going to be practicing with emotions. We're going to do it in several different modalities, and it's going to be really fun. So two things about housekeeping details. There are people in this course from literally all over the world, although most of you are from North America. Many of you are listening to it live. Actually, more of you, more than half of you, will be listening to it later via the MP3. So I want to tell you who are here live that you also can and should download the MP3 and play it again and listen to it and take advantage of, you know, a kind of revisiting the spoken course. We're also going to be having homework. And a lot of the homework in this class is going to be exercises that ask us to look into emotions. So And some of it is really walking around with skillful, you know, working with skillful means, upaya, with the emotions that come up in the moment. And we're also having, we also have partner work, as I believe Debbie told you. So if you want to work with a partner and you want a partner from the course, then write Debbie and she'll set you up, and we'll try to set people up with people who are more or less in their time zone, but that isn't always possible. And in this partner work, you're kind of on your own with your partner to figure out a way that's good for both of you to work together. And I will be sending you actual questions and suggestions for ways to talk to each other and exercises that you can do. And also, there's also downloadable from the private area of the website a protocol on how to work with a partner in these classes, which is based a lot on my own experience with partner work, which, as we all know, is an incredibly profound way to practice. So, what else? One other thing, you know, emotional work can be intense, and I want to invite you to approach it with the level of intensity that you're comfortable with right now, and also to feel completely okay to back off if it feels too intense. I'm not expecting that it will, but it happens because there's a lot of Shakti, there's a lot of power in these teleclasses, and part of what, you know, this kind of transformative power does is it purifies, it brings stuff up, it gives you the capacity to have insight into your life in ways that you may not experience in other settings. So please do, I'd like to encourage you to really take advantage of that, to commit yourself to doing the work. There'll be more exercises than many of you will be able to do right now. But just, I really like to encourage you, even if you're really busy, to take at least one of the practical exercises into your life and do some of the inquiries. Just play with the practices. Not so much worrying, for example, if you're having a busy week, very busy week, not worrying if you're really going into the depths of it in the way you would if you were, say, at a five-day retreat. But giving yourself permission to practice as much as you can and to notice how much transformative Shakti there is in this class. So we're going to chant. We'll chant the Om Namah Shivaya mantras, which are actually ancient mantras from the yogic tradition, and they call upon the aspect of the of consciousness, the quality in consciousness that's known as Shiva, meaning auspiciousness or that which underlies. And it identifies that consciousness as having the qualities of complete presence, complete awareness, and complete unconditional joy. So when we're in our Shiva state, we're present, we're aware, and we're joyful. So, and, you know, the mantras also describe that consciousness, which is everywhere and also within us, as being luminous, as being peaceful, and as being always supporting us without itself needing support. And this is a really important recognition. Once you tune into that self energy within you, the Shiva within you, the free consciousness within you, the core of consciousness that Shiva calls forth, you can do challenging inner work having the confidence that there's a center within you that you can return to that's not diminished or destroyed no matter what happens, and that will ultimately actually be present with you at the end of your life as well as moment by moment. So when we chant these mantras, and we're going to chant, I'm going to lead them, which is a courageous gesture on my part. Actually, I'm not going to lead them. I'm going to let Krishna Das lead them. So here he is. I understand that the sound quality is a little bit fuzzy, but we'll... Actually, it's not so bad. You have your chanting sheets. You can sing along, or you can just listen. Having the feeling that you're actually tuning into your own core, your own pure awareness, which is non-dual, which is ever-present, which is love, and which is utterly conscious and aware.
Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Sachidananda Murtaya Nishprapancha Shantaya Niralambaya Deyate Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Sachidananda Murtaya Nishprapanchaya Shantaya Niralambaya Deyate Om Namah Shivaya Gurave Sachidananda Murtaya Nishprapanchaya Shantaya Niralambaya
into the center of the chest, into the heart, and we'll offer our practice, which is truly a practice that benefits all beings and consciousness itself. It really is. So we'll offer it asking that everything we do here, everything we learn about ourselves and each other, be part of the movement in consciousness that frees all beings from suffering. So we ask that all beings be happy. All beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. That all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. That all of us know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. That all beings experience equanimity beyond hatred, grasping, and dullness. And that we know the equality of all that lives. And we're going to begin now with a practice that is a very important part of our emotional work, and that is the practice of grounding. This is a particular grounding practice that I learned from a Cherokee priest years ago. And many of you know it also because it's one of the kind of popular ways in which we ground, and because I've taught it for years. What I've found with this practice is that it's more honored in the breach than in the observance. I love that statement. You know, in other words, we know about it. We often know it's important. But whenever things get intense or we're busy or we're challenged in some way, we forget that this grounding practice can actually give us a capacity to hold steady that's really important in every moment of life, but especially when we're working with emotions. So inhaling, have the feeling of allowing the breath to come in deeper and deeper, not forcing it, not trying to do diaphragmatic breathing, but just allowing the breath to flow deeper, having the feeling that the breath is actually naturally happening. You're not breathing. You're being breathed. Your body is breathing. The prana in the atmosphere is just very naturally entering your body, and your body is opening to receive the breath. So allow the breath to flow in and as the breath flows in and down, see if you can softly, when you're ready, bring your awareness down to the base of the spine. What will happen is that distraction will arise. You know, your focusing gifts might be working really well tonight or not so well. That's fine. Just keep letting your attention begin to flow as the breath flows in and down into the face of the spine. And then with the exhalation, imagine that there is a laser beam, a rod, a pole of energy that flows from the base of the spine down through the floor. If you're in a high building, down through the whole complex of floors beneath you. If you're on the ground, it can just flow right into the ground. And you literally feel with each exhalation, remember the breath is flowing in very naturally, and with the exhalation, it's also flowing naturally. But you're letting the breath bring your awareness in this line down from the base of the spine down into the earth, flowing down and down and down through rock, through soil, through underground streams, down into the darkness of earth, into the ground, in towards the center of the earth. And just keep letting that grounding cord flow with the exhalation as you inhale and down towards the base of the body. And as you exhale, you're dropping this line, this anchor, into the earth. For some of you, this is a practice you're very used to. For others, it's new. So we're going to do it again and again over the course of this time together. And I guarantee you, if you haven't done it before, you're going to find it really makes a difference in your ability to process stimuli and certainly in your ability to process emotions. So as the energy flows down into the earth, when you've gone, taken it, allowed it to flow as deep as possible, imagine that energy, that line of energy, tying itself to a rock or anchoring itself in some way. And ask that this grounding cord, this subtle anchor, remain strong for you for the next hour or so. Just let yourself feel what it is to experience this connecting cord between your spine and the center of the earth. It doesn't have to be dramatically visual. It's really an energetic experience, and when we use our imagination in this way, it affects us whether we get a skillful visualization or not. It's not about that. It's about intention. It's about energy. And with this sense of the grounding cord sunk into the earth, just let yourself sit, feeling the breath flowing naturally, allowing your awareness to scan the body, flowing from the head to the feet, from the feet to the head. And again, it's not that you have to do a full immersion in these different body parts. What you want to do is allow your awareness, your attention, to comfortably settle itself into your body, to feel your way into your body. And if there's a part of your body that feels particularly tight or held. You can imagine that the breath flows into this place and that with the exhalation it gently releases. Invited to open your eyes. And I also would like to invite you to remain aware of the felt sense inside your body that you can touch right now. One of the opportunities of being together like this is that we actually have support for feeling our way into the energies in the body, which is a very significant part of working with our emotions, one of the keys, one of the doorways, one of the gateways into deep emotion is really the felt sense that emotions create in the body. So just let yourself, in a natural way, be present with anything that you can let yourself experience inside your physical body, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable. And as you become aware of a sensation, breathe into it. Notice if it has anything to say to you. Notice if it wants to release. No worries either way. This is natural mindfulness practice. And again, we'll be doing it a lot. So, there are actually two dysfunctional polarities in the way we hold emotions, which actually have a lot to do with the teaching of chaos theory. There's the practice of expressing our emotions without control, actually literally throwing our emotions outward onto other people. And there's the practice of containing and repressing our emotions. And they correspond with the two sort of dysfunctional polarities of rigidity and chaos. Fortunately, emotion, like reality itself, is always flowing. The word emotion actually means energy and flow. That it's related to a Latin word that literally means flow. And I just noticed today that it's the same root as the word emollient, you know, that wonderful stuff, emollients, that that lubricates. It's the oily, it's a great word for it, which is not coming to me at the moment, but it will. It's kind of the unctuousness, it is called unctuousness. They use it a lot in cooking. You know, the unctuousness in a pastry or the unctuousness in the cream that you're putting on your body. The unctuousness of sweat when you're, you know, in a hot summer day. All of these are emollient. They lubricate. And emotion really has a lot to do with water. You know, as water flows, so do emotions. I'm sure many of you have heard this particular definition of emotion as energy in motion, and you've probably also heard that energy in motion is useful. Energy stuck is problematic. And energy can be stuck as overexpressiveness or as repression. And of course, as you know, when we keep expressing our negative emotions, or even our, you know, sort of inappropriate positive emotions, because that happens as well, it tends to create suffering for others and a feeling of lack and low self-esteem in ourselves. And this this, you know, this sort of, let's say, unacceptability of strong emotions in our public life, especially among spiritual people, and certainly in many, many families. One of my friends says that, you know, she was often told as a child, just, you know, nobody wants to hear you. Just take care of it yourself. And, you know, in many situations, we actually learn that expressing emotions is dangerous, so we learn to repress them. And once we get into spiritual life, especially in the traditions, certain emotions, such as joy, love, devotion, are considered to be positive signs of spiritual advancement. And anger, jealousy, desire, craving, as it's called in Buddhism, are basically unacceptable. So, and in the Eastern traditions, they're linked with delusion, with karmic tendencies that sweep us off track. In Western religious traditions, negative emotions are very specifically connected with sin. You know, in the Desert Fathers of early Christianity, certain emotions were actually called demons, and they were characterized. There was the anger demon, there was the despair demon, there was the fear demon. And a practitioner like St. Anthony would be tormented by demons, which, you know, to any Jungian, sound like unexpressed, suppressed emotions. So for those of you who've been on a spiritual path for a long time, and I am one of them, learning not to demonize your nasty emotions is really important. I was pretty good at repressing emotions, but what I wasn't good at was repressing the kind of fallout of them, which would often just sort of seep through my affect so that people experienced me as off-putting or hostile. And it wasn't really anything I could do about this. It wasn't the way I wanted it to be, but because there were so many unexpressed emotions, and I'm sure many of you have had this experience as well, they had to come out some way, and so they sort of seeped out through the skin. So that approach to emotions, which is, you know, pretty much the standard social dictum of so-called civilized societies and certainly of most spiritual and religious communities, has an opposite idea, which really comes out of the Gestalt and Reiki and energetic therapeutic, now their traditions, other methods of the human potential movement, that you need, you know, that when these emotions are being held in you, you need to express them. So you need to do physical expression of negative emotions. One of the famous ones, which I did myself, is you imagine your parent, the parent that you're angry at, or the partner that you're angry at, sitting in a chair, and you throw Kleenex at them and scream at them, you know, tell them how much you hate them, how much you want to get rid of your attachment to them. You give them back their projected emotions. The thing is, as neuroscience is starting to tell us, is that when we continue to express rage or jealousy or, all its different forms, they strengthen the neural circuits of these emotions. So they actually get the brain in the habit of volatility. So it's, you know, we actually teach our brain to go what's called in neuroscience the low road, that is, to have the emotional brain connect to the amygdala, to the lizard brain, to the flight or flight primitive brain, without connecting to the cortex, which is the part of the brain that is able to witness, observe, and actually create a kind of oversight of emotions and tell us whether this is a good moment to yell at your partner. And of course, as we said earlier, if you don't express your emotions, and this is, of course, where the Reikians were absolutely right, they go underground and they come out through the body as allergies, immune system disorders, ulcers, et cetera, and I know I don't need to tell any of you this because it's really very clear to us. So we have a lot of modalities and practices available to us. Some of them, you know, very kind of empowered by the neuroscience, by the neuroscientists who study. I often feel that neuroscience studies the experiences that we know are real because we've had them, those experiences, and they do double-blind studies, and then they show us that, you know, what's happening in the brain when we have an attack of anger or feel love. But neuroscience has been very helpful in showing us which practices actually help brain plasticity, you know, the transformative capacity of our neuronal circuits to, let's say, turn in a more awake and skillful direction, and which practices actually create painful neuronal circuits. That said, one of the things that I want to, and I'm going to teach you some such practices, but I actually find it much more interesting to look at emotions in a more open-ended and curious way, and to start to recognize how the divine quality in energy actually can teach us. It can actually, emotions are part of the guru function in the psyche. I want to say this again. Emotions are part of the guru function in the psyche. And that means it's very important to pay attention to them. And the more we pay attention to emotions, the more we can begin to experience what a really free-flowing emotion can do for us. So we're going to do an exercise now, which is an exercise for tuning into the free-flowing, the natural free-flowing quality of three primal emotions. So you can begin, we're going to this one. This first one is, several of them involve physical movement. So in this one, I'm going to tell you what to do, and then we'll practice it. So we're going to begin by taking a deep breath in, holding the breath for about 3 seconds, and then sighing the breath out while moving your arms and, if possible, your legs in a kind of a ragdoll way, you know, in a loose, relaxed, free way. As if you're kind of shaking out, but not intensely. You're letting your limbs be ragdollish, and you're letting your head, if that's comfortable for you, and even your torso move. So as you do that, you'll start to get a felt sense of something, which we'll talk about in a minute. So breathe in, and then hold the breath at the top for 3 seconds. And then sigh it out. And it's great if you let out an audible sigh while moving your arms and legs, your head, your torso in a ragdoll fashion. And breathe in and sigh the breath out. Again, breathe in, ragdolling with your arms and legs, sighing the breath out. So do that a few times. The sighing is really important. And I want you to feel what happens in your body, if you possibly can, what the felt sense is in your body when you sigh out your exhalation. And move the body in this way. Now breathe naturally and start to tune into yourself, literally tune into your body. If you tend to be a little bit dissociated, don't worry too much if you're actually in your physical body. Tune into your energy body and just notice how you feel. How's your state? And if it feels softer, calmer, more relaxed, even a little bit, understand that you just received the boon of the energy at the heart of the emotion we call sadness. I think this is such an extraordinary piece of information. I have to credit Carla McLaren, who writes, she's an empath and psychotherapist. I don't know if she actually discovered it, but she's the person who made me aware of it. So, again, you can continue to breathe in and sigh the breath out, and then notice the inner state. Now, if you're a meditator or a yogi, you've probably done this practice. You've probably done this releasing practice. What you may not have known is that the energy which allows this release to happen is flowing sadness, free sadness, sadness without story. You know, mostly our sadness comes fully equipped with narratives about all the reasons we're sad. But when sadness is flowing, when the deep emotional shakti of sadness is flowing, what it is all about is letting go, releasing, letting the tightness in our system dissolve. If you imagine, you know, sadness as an emotion is connected with loss, and the upside of loss is release. You know, when you enter a bath or a pond, there's a release as we let go into the water. And that's actually what sadness is. For some of us, it's an extremely familiar, comfortable feeling. Some of us less so. So if there's something you want to write down about what happened, please do that. And just recognize that when you start to tune into the experience of sadness, very often what we do is we go right to the story and the explanation. This is especially true with the extreme form of release, not extreme, but the strong form of release, which is tears. You know, many of us in spiritual communities find ourselves crying in meditation or during a practice like this, and it's what's actually happening is a release, and there's sadness with it. It's one of the expressions of sadness, and then we immediately go, oh, I'm sad because my boyfriend didn't call me, or I'm sad because I've lost someone I care about, or I'm sad because I'm not getting along with my friend, or, you know, my teenager is you know, saying horrible things to me, or because of my childhood. So all this is what happens when the flowing emotion of sadness gets stuck. So that instead of simply being available to do its job of releasing and bringing your energy back into flow, it gets trapped in the neural circuitry that you've associated with traumatic sadness. So if you let the emotion of sadness get stuck or hijacked by story, that flowing emotion is no longer simply doing its job of releasing, but it's trapped in the neural circuitry of whatever form of trauma you associate with sadness. And imagine how differently you look at sadness if you realize that it's an energy meant to help you let go and relax. And again, if you might like to sigh, and then notice what happens at the end of the sigh. Isn't there a sense of freedom or release? And you could actually use this experience, you could use this practice, this modality, to periodically bring yourself into a released state in the day, in states of stress, and to notice that, yes, there's a feeling of, as you let go, there's a feeling of emptiness. Absolutely. And the emptiness comes from the fact that you've released. The story about the emptiness comes from childhood trauma. But if we let sadness and that out-breath and that sigh gently do its job of releasing, then over time, all those neural connections change and sadness becomes a gift. gift to us. Okay, so we're going to do another quick practice. Sit up straight. This is really important. This is, if you've fallen into meditation, just for the moment, bring yourself out and sit up really straight. Open your eyes. Now, smile as if you were smiling at someone that you really like, as though you were having a really good day, and then stretch your arms out in a welcoming gesture, an open arm gesture, as if you literally were stretching out your arms to someone you really like, just welcoming them into your space. Feel how that feels in your body. How's your body? What's your inner state sense? Now, just notice. So clearly what we've just done is tuned into the root energy of happiness, and I find it really interesting that a facial expression like smiling can literally up-level your mood, which is why the Taoists are so, if you've ever been to a certain Tai Chi classes or Qigong classes, they talk a lot about the inner smile, and that's a recognition of the power of facial expression to shift your mood. So happiness is an incredibly resourceful state. It's a great state to share with other people. Much more skillful in most cases to share your happiness with the bulk of the people you know rather than to share your sadness. But at the same time, happiness is not something you want to freeze, because if you start to, you know, to freeze happiness, to think you should always feel happy, then it stops being a resourceful state. It becomes stuck, and it becomes really a mask, you know, like the smiling mask. So what you always want to do when you're doing this particular practice is really notice the state as it arises, say thank you to it, and then let it move on, let it flow. So we're going to do one more short emotion practice. And this one, you're actually going to have to stand up and move for it. So if you can and if you'd like to, you can put your phone on speaker. And otherwise, in any case, I'm going to give the full instructions, and then I'm going to be quiet and let you do it. So if you need to actually step away from the phone, that's completely fine. But it's good to keep it kind of within hearing distance, excuse me, so that I can call you back with the gong at the end. So stand or sit up straight. Good posture is really helpful for this exercise. Relax your jaw. This will help open your ears, and this is a listening practice. So I'm going to give you the instructions, and then I'm going to be quiet. So there's three steps. Step one, and you can do it while I'm talking, start to listen to your entire field of sound. Listen to the quietest sound in your field. Just keep listening. You want to filter out the more obvious sounds, including my voice, and I'm going to give you a chance to do that in a moment. Listen past the obvious sounds to the quieter ones, and this takes a lot of attention and focus, a particular kind of attention and focus, of a particular kind of alertness. And then once you've started to hear the quietest sound, then you're going to stand and turn your gaze in the direction of where that sound seems to be coming from. And then the third step is that you're going to start to very slowly move towards the sound. So listen toward the quietest sound in the room, in the field where you are. When you found it, look in the direction that it seems to be coming from, and stand and move slowly in the direction of the sound. really keeping your attention on the sounds the sound can lead you. If you're able to do this practice, and for some of us it takes a little practice, you may have noticed that you found yourself in a much more fluid and alert connection to the environment. In other words, that you became more able to sense the environment. Maybe the skin felt sensitive. Maybe there was a sense of timelessness. The emotion that we were presencing, believe it or not, was fear. Fear, I love this, when it's free-flowing, is actually your capacity for alert, intuitive sensing. And I always remember the Mel Brooks joke in Thousand-Year-Old Man. He asked, what was the locomotion device of primitive man? The answer is fear, which, of course, gives us the sense of somebody running away from a saber-toothed tiger. But actually, if you really tune into what it is to sense, you know, to do this listening, and then to sense through the body what it's like to move towards the source of the sound, it starts to actually give you an almost tracker's-like sense of tuning into the world around you. So this subtle alertness, state of absolute alertness, I think we all experience it when we're in a situation where we really have to pay attention. I know for me, it happens when I'm teaching. There's just this moment when I have to get extremely alert. It can happen when you're in danger, when you feel danger. And so in that sense, fear is connected to our intuition, to our survival intuition. And even though fear has gotten a bad name, you know, because we think of fear as being involved with the fight or flight syndrome, which, as we know, is pretty problematical in many times in the modern world. But if we know how to tune into the free-flowing energy of fear and then let it move through us and leave us when it's given us the message, then we actually receive the gift of fear. It connects us to the world in a way that lets us be really extremely skillful. So I'd be interested to know if anyone had something that you'd like to share with us about those three exercises that we just did, anything you realized or noticed. If you have something you want to say, you can press star 7, and say what you have to say. And hello.
Hi there, this is Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi there. One of the interesting arisings for me was as we did the second exercise to access free-flowing happiness, I also felt its opposite, you know, the previous movement toward sadness.
Right. Right. And how did it feel in general?
Well, it was a bit striking, to be honest.
Yeah.
The sadness was more prominent. The opposite was more prominent in that exercise than the happiness.
Was there a story attached to it?
A bit. Yeah,
yeah,
a bit of a narrative, yes.
Yeah. So were you able to kind of let the narrative flow, you know, flow away and, you know, kind of just be with the feeling?
Yes, and even to sort of smile at its arising.
Oh, cool. So, what you're talking about is surprising, but actually not unusual, because the more we start to tune into the felt sense of emotion, the more we realize emotions come in relationship. I mean, in other words, a lot of the time, an emotion is accompanied by its opposite or accompanied by another emotion,
yes,
for example, right? So so part of what we're doing as we do this inner sensing is we're starting to realize actually that our emotions are, it's never just a single felt sense. It's always a combo, and each of them has something to show us in that situation. For example, what occurred to me is that you know, as happiness, as you asked happiness to be present, it triggered what I find it to be a very very natural quality in the psyche, which is, okay, if you're asking me to be happy, I'm going to do the opposite. So sadness arises, and when we can allow the sadness to be there, you know, when we can allow the so-called let's call it negative. I'm personally very fond of sadness. I find it to be an enormously spiritually useful emotion. But as we allow it, then the, you know, so-called positive emotion can also begin to flow, and we can have this experience of happiness, sadness, all being there in the same space. So.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I'm just
blown away.
No. I'm right here. I'm just still struck by the.
Yeah.
And like you, I feel quite comfortable experiencing sadness. It feels like the receptors are
right.
Perhaps
open.
More open.
Yes.
And so it's just sort of funny to me that, you know, I mean, I smile a lot and skip around and tra-la-la and, you know,
just
really curious and interesting in this moment.
It is. And
what would arise.
Yes, and thank you for sharing that. I suspect other people had similar experiences.
Mm.
Yes. So thank you so much, Jamie. And
yes, thank you.
You can remute yourself by pressing *6.
Okay.
And anyone else have something to share? Okay, last chance. Not last chance. We'll have many more chances. So, now one of the things that we know from our psychological work and from brain science is that a lot of the negative stories that attach themselves to emotions and turn them from free-flowing gifts, you know, gift-giving energies to big 500-pound wrestlers that knock us out in all the different ways they do, has to do with the fact that that so much of our sort of secondary experience of emotion comes from various forms of childhood and even present life trauma that get associated with emotions. So, for example, I have a friend who really has a very hard time processing sadness because she has a childhood trauma of abandonment, and she goes into a complete sort of panic attack of abandonment, which is a child. It comes from a childhood trauma that has not been able to move out of her body, and it's extraordinarily moving to see her, to see how this very sophisticated, very smart, very sort of psychologically acute person gets hijacked by the trauma in her body. So, and often our response to, you know, having a traumatic association with a particular emotion is to try to erase it. You know, so we do something like EMDR or some of the, I teach also practices for starting to remove the residue of the negative emotions and stories. And one way to do this, which we will practice later in the class, is to feel your way into the emotion, to let go of the story, as we've been doing, and then to find it in your body and just make some space around it and be present with it. This is one of the ways that we can begin to dissipate the kind of trauma aspect of emotion. You know, this is a very useful process. What's even more useful is to actually be able to stay present with an emotion and let it show you something, actually learn how to talk to it, how to dialogue with it, how to really hear what it has to tell you. Since I've been doing this course, since I've been preparing for this course, of course, my own life, as it tends to do when we're about to teach something, my own life kind of jumped up and started giving me opportunities to see what I do with this. And one of the things that happened to me, and this is like so classic, is that a hip pain that I had suddenly migrated into my torso and gave me like a intense stomach ache, which felt exactly like appendicitis. And so last night I was lying in bed, and I decided to go into the emotion. So I dived into the pain. It's a classic mindfulness practice, and many of you may have done it. I let myself feel the pain and just imagine myself moving deeper and deeper into the pain, which may be easier in some ways to do with physical pain, although I have to say I really hate physical pain. So it was not something that I had been, I naturally do. And I was with a friend who was an acupuncturist, and who was taking my pulses. And he said that the pain pulse, which is, you know, one of the common acupuncture signs that you're in an inflamed state, as soon as I went into the pain, that pain pulse calmed. So merely meditating on the felt sense of the pain began to relieve it. And then I began to ask the felt sense in my body, and the body is really a good place to work with heavy-duty emotions, as many of you know. I began to ask the pain, okay, so what is this about? What are you about? And as my awareness kind of spiraled inside, it was like I was using the pain as a kind of a gate. And behind the gate was a kind of black hole tunnel, and images began to arise. And at the same time, a message came, a feeling message, an emotional message of radical, black, rageful anger, like deeply stuck in my body. And at the same time, an image of a childhood caregiver of mine who was incredibly angry. And I realized that that somehow her rage, along with, of course, I'm sure, you know, rage of my own, had gotten stuck in this part of my body. And the more I tuned into it and let myself feel the heat and the you know, the darkness and the, you know, it's anger is very hot and dark. I began to feel not only the pain releasing, but actually something much deeper releasing. So it's a very powerful to look into emotion through the body. And because I was working with anger, I thought it would be appropriate if we started practicing with anger. And so we're going to do a practice that's in this methodology that we're working with for recognizing, allowing, and letting anger give us the gifts that it has for us. So in other words, basically, we're starting out this week by looking at the positive gifts of negative, so-called negative emotions, once they begin to move. So the anger, before we do the anger practice, I just want to tell you something about the point, you know, the gift, the reason for anger. Just as the purpose of flowing sadness, the gift of flowing sadness is release, relaxation, letting go, which often segues into peace and well-being and happiness, the purpose of fear is alertness. The purpose of anger is to establish boundaries, to protect what is vulnerable in ourselves and others, and of course our personal space, and also to restore balance. So anger gives us the power, because anger is a tremendously, you know, empowered energy. It gives us the power to protect vulnerability and to restore balance. And one of the questions that anger asks us, and we can learn to tune into it, you know, in a situation where you feel anger arising, ask yourself, what needs to be protected? What needs to be protected? And you'll very often get a sense of what it is, of how there's been a boundary violation of some kind, or you're losing yourself in over-empathy, or you know, you're getting sort of merged with someone else, or you've kind of given up your power in some inappropriate way. And the next question is, what needs to be restored? What needs to be restored? So, you know, you can see that there's these two sides of anger, that, you know, the side of anger that's really it's like the soldier at the gate of your psyche that says, nope, you don't come past this. And it's also the one who's able to redress the imbalances that vulnerability has created in our system. The Hindu deities associated with protective and restorative anger are Durga, who is a feminine deity, and the masculine deity Rudra, who is a form of Shiva. Rudra's name means he who cries, because he's a very emotionally expressive as a deity. He's not one of those detached deities. He's a storm god, and his energy is extremely fearsome, and it sweeps away that which is obstructing the good, and restores the good, restores balance. Durga is the anger that comes to us at the borderline of transformative change. She's a lion. She stands up for the vulnerable in us and then restores balance to our psyche and the social order. So Rudra is the warrior father, and Durga is the warrior mother. And their quality is free-flowing anger, which is, I think, for most of us, it's both a fascinating and a uncomfortable recognition to begin to experience the anger in us, the anger, the free-flowing anger that's beneath the, you know, the difficult expressions, the repression, and the over-expression that, you know, that bursts out as outbursts. And, of course, people who act in the realm of social activism are often inspired by this pure anger, which is, you know, is one of the ways that the strong nobly protect the weak. It's a soldier's emotion. It's a warrior emotion. And yet because it's very hot, it's really important that we learn how to channel it. So now, obviously, pure flowing anger gets obstructed by repression. when it becomes apathy, physical illness, you know, like the kind of enmeshed, entangled, codependent relationships that, you know, are so common in the world. And it also, because a repressed anger will often lead you to abandon yourself, to just give yourself over to others' power. And then, of course, it leads to depression. So repressing anger is not helpful. On the other hand, when you express anger in an uncontrolled way without an inner core, you know, without really recognizing its purpose and using it skillfully, of course, it leads to rages, simmering hostility, prejudice, hatred of others, and, you know, expressed anger, of course, is all over our world right now in terribly destructive ways. And, you know, those of us who are spiritual people really are not at all comfortable with our overexpressed anger, and there's a good reason for it. It's not a skillful use of anger. The interesting thing is that both repressing anger and overexpressing it both make it hard to keep a boundary. So, in other words, when you repress your healthy anger, you can't say enough, which means you can't protect yourself and you can't protect others. But when you reactively express anger every time you feel it, you also actually you blow up your own boundaries because there's nothing there to you know, to hold a natural boundary line between the internal and external world. You're simply throwing it onto other people. So the healthy way, and then of course what happens when you're overexpressing it is that you get completely caught in shame and self-justification, and it's not great. So the healthy way to channel anger energy, and that's one of the things we'll be doing in a minute and also this week, is to use it to strengthen your energetic boundaries. And you do this always not with an attitude to attack others or shut them out, but with a sense of protection and restoration. So as we do the following two practices, think of it as a meditation on creating healthy, vibrant boundaries. The effects of channeling your anger into creating a strong, vibrant boundary is going to change all your relationships in a really profound way. It might take a while, but it's an utterly necessary aspect of our maturation is to actually give yourself not only permission but also motivation to take seriously the understanding of how important boundaries is, and to learn how to use the gift in anger, which is the sparkly, bright, just profoundly powerful energy that actually allows you to interact from a real relationship to your own core, because you're channeling your anger into making a boundary, not repressing it, not turning it on yourself, and not turning it on others. And that doesn't mean that you won't, you know, mess up from time to time, or a lot, because that's what it is to be a human being and have all the issues that human beings have. But the intention and the practice really, really, really make a difference. I'd like to ask you to begin by creating the sense of boundary. And the best way to do this is actually to stand, stretch out your arms. I know it's hard if you're holding the phone. Maybe you can put the phone on speaker, or, you know, stretch out one of your arms. And so you begin to get a sense that there is actually a kind of bubble of energy that surrounds your body, and it actually is 3 to 6 feet out from your body. It's sort of the length of your arms and the length of your stretched out legs, and the boundary also goes into the floor. It doesn't stop by the floor. So if you're sitting down, just feel that the boundary at the foot side is actually inside the floor. So just notice this sense of there being a kind of bubble or enclosure of energetic vibratory energy that is your personal space, your boundary, that wall that gives you protection against whatever wants to infiltrate your private space from outside. And of course, other people, the people you're intimate with, will get inside your boundary, and that's beautiful. It's not like you're going to use it for, you know, for pushing other people away. It's more that it becomes something that you can return to and recreate at will. So in this moment, imagine your boundary as a circle of light. If you're not so good at visualization, see if you can experience it as an energetic flow, and you can practice with the breath. So inhaling, let the breath come in and down towards the center of your body, and then with the exhalation, feel as though the energy in the breath is actually creating this energetic boundary, this bubble of energy all around you. And yes, you'll get distracted. You'll lose it. You'll go, oh, I'm not getting it. You'll start thinking because boundary creation often brings up our desire to distract ourselves. But you're just going to keep allowing yourself to imaginatively create this boundary. If you've done a lot of this work before, then your boundary is already fairly present. You can just tune into it. If you haven't done a lot of it, there's a little bit of imaginative effort that's required to put it in place. So we're just sending the empowerment of our collective intention to allow each one of you to begin to recognize that energetic bubble that surrounds your physical body. That creates the space of protection within which you can experience vulnerability without having it affect your relationships with others, in which you can process your emotions, and in which you can really feel your unique self-individuality as an energetic being. And of course, for us spiritual people, the creation of this energetic boundary is super important, especially as we begin to learn how to enter subtle states without disassociating, without leaving the body. We protect our embodiment with this boundary. So now, having created this preliminary boundary, we're now going to start working with anger and channeling it into the boundary. And you can begin by finding an experience of anger. So I just want to say this practice works best when you are actually angry in the moment, but it's really important to practice in this way when you're more or less quiet before the real thing arises. So you're remembering an incident where you got really angry. And as you summon the situation, which can be an old one or a new one, use the power of story, the power of narrative to, you know, really get into it. Remember what was said, remember what was done, feel the insult or the disrespect or the injustice or the wounding, whatever it was, and feel the anger, the heat of it, the intensity of it, as hot and intense as you can. And now ask yourself, what needed to be protected in this moment? and just let the anger tell you. And ask yourself what needs to be restored, what needed to be restored. And just let yourself, let the answer come, you know, don't think about it too much. Stay with it. And understand that you may feel sadness or fear or shame mixed in with this, because sadness and fear and shame are emotions that kind of walk side by side with anger. They're present with anger. So sometimes when we're wanting to summon anger, we may find that there's sadness there too, or there's shame as well. There's fear. So just notice the felt sense of whatever is arising. And drop deeper into your body and see if you can find out which sensations you're most closely aware of. What's in your stomach? What's going on in your chest? What's the energy like on your face, around your eyes? How is anger manifesting in your body? Now, once again, become aware of the energetic boundary, the energetic bubble that surrounds you on all sides. And feel the energy in your anger as a bright, red, sparkly heat. For some of you, it might be very, very easy to imagine it as fire, as flames. And feel that these flames flow out of your body and into the energetic bubble. You may still feel them in your body, that's fine. But you're literally channeling that flaming anger energy into the energy bubble that is surrounding you and protecting you. And see if you can really tune into the power of anger to say no. The mantra of this particular stage of the practice is no. 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 Very firm, and with the fire of anger in it, if that's appropriate for you. The bright energy of anger, and for you it might be energetic. It may not have a color if you're not visual. It also may have a sound, and I suggest the sound of no. The energy of no, which is at the heart of anger's need to protect. Anger says no. So for all the times you didn't say no, for all the times you said no as a tantrum, let the energy of no flow with all its heat, all its flaming qualities into creating a bright, strong, sharp boundary. And if you get distracted, bring yourself back into a felt sense of your own body and of the energy bubble, the energy boundary surrounding you, which is also your body. It's your subtle body. It's protecting your physical body. It's creating the space for you to embody. And now, holding the sense of boundary, recognize that where there is a strong no, there's also the possibility of a true yes, an empowered yes. So your boundary is in place, and you can allow the sound of yes to fill the energy of your protective boundary bubble. Realizing that in that yes is anger's gift for restoring what needs to be restored. see if you can allow that boundary to stay in place, to feel that the anger energy that you called up is actually now functioning as a very bright, flaming, energetic, protective bubble, an energetic boundary that surrounds you within which you can do the inner work of practicing with your emotions, of allowing emotions to flow, and also of realizing that you can put this boundary in place in so many situations in which you might ordinarily tend to get overrun by pressure or other people's energy. The energy from the TV, all the ways in which our inner energy space is kind of assaulted and impinged on. So keeping this energy bubble, this energy boundary in place, I'm going to ask you, and you'll be getting an assignment about this, I'm going to ask you to do the practice of creating the boundary every morning when you get up. The best way to do it, I've found, is to lie in bed and do it before you get out of bed, or sit up in bed and do it before you get out of bed. If you're a meditator, you can do it as your first step in meditation. And then from time to time during the week, again, I'm going to give you the instructions. Summon the energy of anger. Let go of the story and see if you can channel that energy into the bright light that strengthens your boundary. And know that you may find yourself having a lot of memories and releases. That's okay. And in those instances, you can use that flowing energy of sadness to actually, the watery flowing energy of sadness, to let whatever the body, whatever the anger energy tends to get stuck, to let it just kind of flow out gently, not feeling that you're trying to get rid of it, always asking, what is it showing me that needs to be protected? What is it showing me that needs to be restored? It's such a powerful set of questions. So we are now at the end of our class time, and we're going to close in a few minutes. You will be getting a homework assignment tomorrow. And I want to encourage the class also is going to be available in the morning on the private area of the website, and you have received an email from Deb showing you, telling you how to get on the website. The homework will be up probably tomorrow evening or perhaps early in the morning on Friday. But tonight I'm going to send you a kind of simple meditation and boundary and grounding practice that I'm going to ask you to do during your meditation tomorrow. And please do connect with us on the listserv. Many of you know how interesting the conversations can get on the listserv. And if you want a partner to work with, let Deb know, and one will be present and available for you. And if there's somebody that you know already that you want to partner with, someone who's in the class, that's fine too. So have a beautiful evening. And as we close, I'd just like to ask you to tune into the energy of the breath. Feel the breath, the inhalation bringing your attention in down towards the core of the body, and feeling the exhalation flowing out as if it were flowing out through every pore, and gently releasing whatever wants or needs to be released. Feeling that this boundary, this energetic boundary that we've created, actually holding you, that this energy boundary is really like, it's a divine mother energy. It has the protective quality of the divine mother, and it has the strength of the divine masculine. And so within that boundary that you're going to create and strengthen over the just allow the breath to flow in very naturally at its own pace, and allow the exhalation to flow out, allowing the breath to bring your attention to whatever in the body wants to be felt, accepted, allowed. Remembering that it is as it is. All of this, all of this in our experience is arising as an expression of Shakti, the divine conscious energy. It is what is, and it's always changing, transforming. All we need to do is be present with the breath and the sensations that arise as emotions or body feelings, and allow that energy to flow, to be as it is. And as insights arise, which I know they will as you do these contemplations, I really want to encourage you to journal about them, because a lot of very useful information is going to flow in you as we do these practices. And I love you all. It's really great to be with you. Have a great evening, a great week. Namaste and good night.